From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Wednesday, April 10th. Coming up, we'll learn about a team of University of Illinois journalists who recently traveled to Sierra Leone to report on the issue of period poverty. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. The Illinois Secretary of State knows the DMV can be confusing, and he's trying a new model to fix that. Alex Stegman reports.
Alexi Janulius is implementing one-stop shopping. The first location to try it is in West Suburban Plano. No longer will you wait to renew your driver's license only to find out that you're actually in the line to renew vehicle registrations. Janulius says soon employees will be able to do everything at one desk, including ordering new license plates and signing up to be an organ donor. He calls the new process revolutionary, and he's excited to see the reaction from customers who use it. All DMVs in the state will get converted to be one-stop shops. Janulius' office is deciding which ones will go first. I'm Alex Degman.
A national consulting firm released the first part of its report about staffing at the Urbana Police Department. Illinois Student Newsroom's Farah Anderson reports some want city officials to wait to make any decisions until future reports that examine alternative response models are released.
The report recommended hiring 13 more police staff, which could cost the city millions and involve raising taxes. Danielle Shenwith is the supervisor of Cunningham Township, which provides services for unhoused people. Shenwith says the city should not spend millions of dollars to hire more personnel when the report showed that most calls to UPD are non-criminal.
What I'm hearing is that we should spend $1.5 to $2 million on more police personnel and hope that community groups pick up the slack with the alternative responder model, and that is not an appropriate use of public dollars.
Shenwith says police often call Cunningham Township for help responding to calls, which proves that alternative responders are needed. I'm Farah Anderson, Illinois Student Newsroom.
Since the COVID-19 pandemic began, grocery prices around the country have risen more than 25%. Illinois Student Newsroom's John Shea reports some Champaign-Urbana residents are struggling to afford groceries.
Grocery prices increased by 5.8% last year, according to the USDA. Among the foods that saw the greatest increases, fats and oils, processed fruits and vegetables, cereals, and bakery products. I spoke with Lori Gorham after a recent shopping trip at Aldi in Champaign.
I'm still working at almost 78 years old, and this is it. I mean, we can't do anything else. We don't travel, we don't go out to eat.
A financial educator with University of Illinois Extension says using coupons, comparing prices, and reducing food waste are great ways to save on groceries. I'm John Shea, Illinois Student Newsroom.
Voters in Urbana will see a ballot question in November asking them if they support an end to federal military aid to Israel. Participants in last night's Cunningham Township annual town meeting in Urbana voted 76 to 40 to put the non-binding question on the ballot. Supporters said America's military support has contributed to the deaths of tens of thousands of civilians in Gaza during the Israeli-Hamas war. Opponents said Israel has a right to defend itself after Hamas killed more than 1,000 people in their attack on October 7th. They also criticized the resolution's description of Israel as an apartheid regime. The town meeting in Urbana also approved a second non-binding resolution for the November ballot against any investments in fossil fuel companies by the city of Urbana. Still to come, we'll learn more about a team of University of Illinois journalists who recently traveled to Sierra Leone to report on the issue of period poverty. That story is coming up next on 217 Today.
Explore the transformative potential of the arts in the documentary series The Expressway with Dulé Hill. The series delves into the profound impact of the arts on our daily lives, centered on the diverse perspectives of artists from across the U.S. Viewers join lifelong singer, dancer, and actor Dulé Hill in a celebration of community and creative expression. The Expressway with Dulé Hill is available to stream now with the free PBS app or on our website at video.will.illinois.edu.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield.
A team of University of Illinois journalists recently traveled to Sierra Leone to report on the issue of period poverty. It's a global phenomenon. When women and girls don't have access to the products they need when they get their periods, it can cause a lot of shame and even prevent girls from going to school. This reporting was done in collaboration with student journalists in Sierra Leone. They're now working to produce a documentary on the topic. I'm joined now by two of the students who went on that trip. Noor Longhi and Maggie Canuti are juniors at the U of I. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Okay, to start, what are the biggest differences between what it's like to get your period as a girl in the U.S. versus in Sierra Leone?
A lot of women in Sierra Leone can't afford to buy the traditional disposable pads and tampons that we see here in the United States. So instead, they're using these reusable pads. But the biggest problem with that is that it's really hard to actually wash them properly. So they don't have access to that clean, safe water that they need to actually wash these products. And a lot of women can't even afford these reusable products. So instead, they said to us that they would opt to just use scraps of fabric or old clothes. But getting your period in Sierra Leone is also really similar to the U.S. in a lot of ways. I think women all around the world are all kind of united by this experience of menstruation. So one thing that one of the women mentioned was that when a girl gets her period in Sierra Leone, something that is told to them is, oh my God, congratulations, you're a woman. And that's something that I heard on my first period.
Another part of period poverty is getting education about sexual and reproductive health, which is like a big problem there. There's a lot of stigma around talking about it, and a lot of students won't receive that education about their periods or about sex. And there's a common problem, too, going with that, of girls that will stop going to school because they get their period because, like Nora's talking about, it's very hard for them to deal with it. And then they might miss that education or not receive it. And a really big problem in that country, too, is teen pregnancy. There's, like, really high rates of that. So combating that would be, like, getting that education. So a lot of those girls, young girls, didn't get that education, so they do become pregnant. And then it becomes hard for them to deal with that, and they're shamed. And a lot of them will stop going to school because of that, too, along with getting their period. It might be difficult for them to go into school, which leads to them missing school.
You primarily filmed at two locations. Can you tell me about those locations?
Yeah. So the first one we filmed at is called Umen Talk, which is Creole for woman talk, because they do speak to girls about becoming a woman. Like Nora was talking about that phrase. So they're an NGO, and they produce reusable menstrual pads. They sew them and distribute them to schools around Sierra Leone, more locally in Freetown. And they work with these schools. They produce the pads, bring them, and they not only distribute these kits of these reusable pads, but they also give them an education, like I mentioned before, about what their period is in depth. They go into their calendar, and then they also give them education about sex.
Yeah, and then the other location was a school called Education for All. There were children of so many different ages, so there's not really a specific grade range or age range. And Education for All is one of the schools that Umen Talk actually brings products to and talks to the students about periods with. And there we actually got to see and hear a lot of student stories about their periods. And something that really jumped out to me was we talked to two female students, and they had really similar stories of them going to school for a period of time and then getting their period, bleeding through their pants or skirt, and just being harassed and yelled at and shamed. And this, like, traumatized them so much that they stopped going to school for so long. And both of their stories had them ending up at Education for All. So it's been a kind of a place where, you know, girls are uplifted about their periods. They don't feel that type of shame. And we got to see how that culture is playing out within a society that kind of puts a lot of shame on women.
Maggie, you also spoke to the founder of the school. She has a pretty compelling personal story. Tell us about her and what you learned about life for the girls in the school.
Yeah, so the founder, her name is Mamusu. We interviewed her, and she told us about herself and about the school. So first, she mentioned when we came there, she was very welcoming to us. She told us that all the kids at the school refer to her as mother, like they're her children. And she also mentioned during her interview that she takes in orphan children and raises them as her own. She says she doesn't differentiate between her biological and her orphan children. She loves all of them equally. And she lives on the school property, actually, and doesn't even take in a salary. We were asking her a lot about how children were handling their periods there. And we were there one day and we were filming when Umentak came to distribute the kits. So I was filming in the room where they were educating the girls and giving them their kits. And I remember I was leaving the room and Mamusu walked up to me and she was like, "Hey, come quick. A girl just got her first period," which I was like, wow. Because they just got their kits. Like, the timing was, like, really crazy. So I went with her. I had a camera. And the girl, they have bathrooms there. They're essentially squatting toilets. Mm-hmm. And I know they don't have, like, toilet paper and stuff like that. So they went over, and the girl was in the bathroom stall. And they had her kit, and they were handing her the stuff. And she had actually bled through her skirt. So they got her a new skirt, too. And then when she left the bathroom, she went over and talked to Mariatu, who was the woman from Umentak who gave them the education. And she was telling her, like, this is, like, totally normal. You shouldn't be ashamed at all. And it was just a really, like, beautiful thing to see all these, like, female role models helping this young girl so she doesn't feel ashamed and that she can go right back to class after this.
Noor, do you have an example of how your perspective shifted as a result of working alongside those student journalists in Sierra Leone?
Yeah, totally. I think one of the biggest things for me going into this that I was really concerned about was we are a group of really privileged American students going to Africa to film a documentary, and there is this long time, I feel like, stigma and perspective from American journalists or just Americans in general surrounding the developing world. And I was really scared to impose that perspective on these people. Mm-hmm. And I found myself having to catch myself when I was falling into those traps, like thinking in certain ways. And one example is we interviewed this little girl and we followed her day after school and what it looked like. And you know, I watched her, and, like, right after school, she just got started on dinner and was, like, gutting these fish and cutting this chicken feet and making it into this stew outside, and it was really hot. Right after she's done making this stew, she goes to the well and is getting all these buckets of water and carrying it, and then she does her laundry, and I was like, oh, my God, like, thinking, you know, about my life, and I was like, that looks really hard. Like, in my head, I was like, that sucks. Like, I wouldn't want to do that. But I had to catch myself because when we talked to her, she was like, I love my life.
So I like living here, and I love it here. I have time to study, and I have time to play.
She was just really grateful that she was able to do all of these things that I feel like I take for granted. And, you know, who am I to look at a life and say, oh, poor them, just because it's different than my own. And definitely having the Sierra Leonean students there to put things into context and, like, open my eyes really helped me, like, catch myself when I found myself falling into that.
Noor Longhi and Maggie Kanuti are juniors at the U of I. They're part of a team from the U of I Journalism Department that went to Sierra Leone to report on the issue of period poverty. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From IPM News, I'm Kimberly Schofield.
And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says today will be mostly cloudy, a chance of rain late in the day, and a high of 67 degrees. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by Alex Degman, Farah Anderson, John Shea, and Jim Meadows. Music by the Kilbornelli Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.